So, got my Sherman Rice about the ICRA, and he says that, huh? You can't hear me? I don't know why. That better? I'll call back in. Let me call back in again. One sec. I'm back. How's that? Yeah. It had to be the connection. So, Vayikra, God calls to Moshe, and the Ramban says at the end of Shmos, right, the Mishkan was built, the Shekhinah is on it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, the cloud, is on it, and Moshe doesn't go near because of the cloud, and so HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls Moshe to reassure him that the Mishkan is perfect, right? And that he is to come in. Hashem wanted to impart to Moshe a new command, right? Moshe would say, Hineini, then I'm at your service. This was a call exclusively to Moshe Rabbeinu. And why we say, Kol Hashem Shoiver Arozim, the voice of HaKadosh Baruch who breaks cedar trees and should have been heard everywhere, this was only heard by Moshe. And somehow the people understood that HaKadosh Baruch who was showing the esteem he held Moshe in, and that's why this message, which they knew came from Hashem, could only be heard by Moshe. Okay. The Parsha goes on, and it talks about a number of korbanos, one of which, and this is Rav Lehrfeld's word from last night at Mincha, one is the Asham, if somebody steals and denies when caught and brought to Beis Din, and he gives a shvua, and eventually he admits the truth, he brings a korban Asham, and he has the mitzvah of a heshivitha gzeila sher gazal. He has to return that which he stole. Rabbi Lehrfeld quoted from Rav Zilberstein's Sefer of the shaila he got, and Rav Zilberstein relates it to our parsha. A gentleman in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim owned a shoe store. And he would be busy between Purim and Pesach, right? Outfitting all kinds of people in that period. And what he would do is he had his stock of merchandise that he would bring, right? That he couldn't keep all in the store at one time. He had it on a higher level. And when things would slow down, he would go up there and he would get boxes down. Now, one of the problems he had was that he could not always carry the boxes down, and so occasionally he dropped them. Lo and behold, he does that. He comes down, and there's a guy cold stone out. He knocked the guy out. So he gets Shasola, or Mugin Davar Adam, the guy comes back, and the guy says, I sue you daily. You're right? Screwed, blued, and tattooed. I'm coming after you. and disguise, right? He claims whiplash of the toenails and everything else. His teeth were bad. Don't ask. He's got a massive, massive suit. And the guy is going to have to make an insurance claim. So he tells the insurance company, and the insurance company says, well, do you remember that when we gave you the policy, we told you we wanted security cameras in certain hidden spots? So they take out the security cameras, and in fact, they see the store is empty. This Yukofavl comes in, goes to the cash register, and basically takes whatever he can, and then decides he's going to take a couple of pair of shoes too, because if he's already gunving, he should get it out. And then lo and behold, he gets knocked out. So the insurance company says to him, sorry guy, you're a gunner, and you were in the midst of stealing, and therefore you get nothing. And he says, I don't care how it happened. This guy was negligent. He threw this down, and I'm entitled to compensation. Now, this is a part that blows my mind, and I can't figure it out. This gunner was religious enough to say, we'll ask a shayla of Rav Zilberstein. So, and they go to the rabbi, and the rabbi says, okay, let's look at halacha. Halacha says that if, in the normal course of circumstances, I am in my store, which is open to the public, and I know the public comes in, I don't have to let them in one by one. If I do something of negligence, I'm chayef. And the gunef is jumping up and down. And then he says, but. And they say, what? He says, we have a halacha called dan dine de nafshe. What this means is the following. If this guy had come into the store, and if the owner had been aware that he was robbing him, and if the owner figured the only way he could stop him was to throw 6 boxes of shoes down and knock him out, he would have been allowed to. And therefore, Rav Zilberstein said, since you did come in an injurious manner, you didn't come in to buy, but to steal, we are going to say that he had this right. The fact that he didn't do it deliberately doesn't matter. And my friend, not only don't you get anything, but you got to pay for that which you stole. And that's the story. Okay. Rabbi Friend turns to the first pasuk in this parsha. Hashem called to Moshe, and he spoke to him. And we know there's a little aleph because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to people to say, look how great he is, God spoke to him alone. So he tried to minimize it in some way. The Medrash says, let's take an example from Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all the sages, the greatest teacher, the greatest of the Nevi'im, and notwithstanding that he had that status, and he knew he had that status, he didn't, it wasn't that he said, oh, I'm so humble, I'm not this. He knew he was, but he still acted with humility. And therefore, he refused to go in until invited. Rav Bergman, one of the Rosh Yeshivas, has a sefer, Sharei Ura. And He says, the word dea, right? It says Moshe used dea, and he, intelligence, right? And the Medrash says, if a Torah scholar doesn't have intelligence, and he still operates as a Torah scholar, a dead animal's body is better to him, better than him. Rav Bergman says, Moshe was the greatest. But, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu knew the secret. IQ, brain power, that's not what makes someone a great Talmud Chacham. But rather, it's a yearning to learn, to know more and more about Hashem's Torah. An unquenchable thirst for Torah knowledge, that's what propels. And there must be this overwhelming desire to acquire Chachma, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom. We can imagine Moshe standing at the Ohel Moed. And Moshe knew that if he would go in, he would have the opportunity to learn from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his greatest passion. But he had Derech Eretz. He would not enter because it wouldn't be proper unless invited, no matter how great the experience would be. I don't violate that boundary. Derech Eretz normally requires one to wait until they're summoned. This is what the Medrash says, that the scholar that doesn't have Derech Eretz is an inferior human being. And he quotes the Ger Rebbe. He says, what's this analogy to a dead treif animal? He says, a dead treif animal stinks. And everyone goes away because they're repelled by the stench. However, the Ger Rebbe said, people do not, as a rule, stay away from a Talmud Chacham who doesn't have Derech Eretz, because he only stinks on the inside and you can't smell it. But he says he's no better. Rabbi Friend says that, and this was written in 2002, that he saw a report summarizing the status of Derech Eretz in a major Torah area. And he said, I'm not going to tell you where. It's a prominent area with many really good yeshivas and day schools. And he says, I look and it says, teachers are quitting in large numbers. Parents aren't concerned by the absolute chutzpah of their children. There is a mode, there is a mood and a practice of Moshav Leitzim, which is a place of scoffers. And as much as they can, everybody tries to poke fun at the administration, at the teachers, etc. And a number of the teachers talk about the level of failure, the level of the fallen discipline in behavior, that those who had 20 years of experience say it gets worse and worse. Now, he says, we would normally praise ourselves that we don't have kids coming to school with guns and knives, etc. But he says, we've got to still take a look at the status of where we would be. He says, let's look. Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all the teachers in the history of the Jewish people. But he never broke any rules of etiquette, no matter how much he wanted to learn. This is something that's got to be taught and taught and retaught, he says, to all of Klal Yisroel, to try to emulate the midos of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Medrash Rabbah has a pasuk from Malachi that says, Toras Emes, the Torah of truth, Bepicha, was in his mouth, and he returned many people from Averos, from sin. This is Aaron the Kohen, who would bring people close to Torah. It says that Aaron was one of the first Jewish outreach professionals. But what did he do? He never compromised on truth and halacha. He never made something forbidden permitted, and he never did something that was permitted and threw an unnecessary chumrah and said, no, you can't do it. He says, Aaron attracted people by his consistency. He says, when push comes to shove, we are honest people. And the thing that most Torah observant Jews respect is consistency. We don't, if we're devoted, we don't need permissiveness. And we don't need chumras. We need somebody who walks in the path of shalom, like Aaron, who can say, this is what you can do. And then he said, the other thing is, Aaron had Torah. Obviously, Aaron was second in command, and he knew tremendous amount of Torah, and he would give that over to the people with him, and thereby they would realize the special nature of Torah. And he says, I was told this story, Rabbi Fran says, from someone who is well known in the outreach annals and who works as a very successful Jewish outreach professional. He said when he was newly married, studying in Kollel, he got an apartment at one of the outskirts of Yerushalayim because he needed one as cheaply as possible. And his neighbors on all floors were what he called not yet frum people. And he became friendly with all of them. He talked to them. He asked them how they felt. If he could do something, he did it for them. And after all, and they liked him, and they knew he was a student, and he said to them, let me ask you, would you like to learn something with me? non-judgmental, right? I'm not trying to convert anybody, but would you like to know something about Torah? And because he did it in such a warm manner, they were happy to do it. Now we had a dilemma. What should he teach? Should he go to basic Yahadus, right? Should he go to the Rambam's 13 principles of faith? Should he maybe use the Rambam's guide to the perplexed? Should he get the Kuzari, etc.? He says Hashkacha had it that he met Rav Uri Zohar, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Uri Zohar, who started his career as Israel's most loved performer, totally fry, became a frum yid, became a major Talmud Chacham, and became a major outreach professional. And you can read books that he'd written on him, Waking Up Jewish, and he wrote another one, You Were Robbed. They're excellent reads. He asked Rabbi Zohar, you are the par excellence teacher in this area. What should I teach? And Rav Uri Zohar said, what are you learning in yeshiva? And he said, in yeshiva, I'm learning Bava Kama. Bava Kama, as many of you know, is the laws of damages. A cow damages. In today's day and age, we could say it's a cow. It's of not taking care of a fire I started. It's putting an impediment in the way of the public and causing people to stumble. And he was perplexed. He looked at Rabbi Zohar and he said, I don't get it. And he said, what do you mean you don't get it? He said, these are people who have never learned anything. And Rabbi Zohar said, do you understand the power of Torah? And the young man was, I guess, somewhat taken aback because he was learning, right? That was his profession. And he said, I guess I don't know what you mean. And Rabbi Zohar said, a material that you use to awaken Jewish neshamas is not as important as you trying with all your heart and soul to awaken them. And so he listened, and he began learning Bava Kama with them. I don't know if he started with the Mishnah or whether he actually did the Talmud. It doesn't tell us. But he said he started learning with them. And after a while, one or two of them wanted to learn a little more. And then they wanted to know about Shabbos. And within a period of a number of months, he had a number of people beginning to become Shomrei Shabbos. And they weren't eating trarfus. They had always thought that what they had eaten wasn't terrible. Now they were more careful. And he said that that was the first group of, I guess, residents, friends, neighbors that he worked with. And he said God gave him a tremendous bracha that it worked. And because it did work, and because he is a devoted individual, he replicated this, and he did it again, and he did it again. And he says, I always start with Bava Kama. He said, Rabbi Zohar was correct. He says, the pattern is successful. And he says, I don't doubt if I started with something else, it would also be good. But I guess he's maybe a creature of habit. He's got these classes, etc. And he says, this is the paradigm of Aaron HaKohen. Aaron would sit down with a Yid who he knew had done something wrong. And he wouldn't castigate the person about what he did wrong. He would say, would you like to learn another halacha with me? And who wouldn't want to have Aaron HaKohen next to them teaching? And in so doing, he basically got them to open up. And I think the Medrash says people would say, I'm learning with Aaron HaKohen. If he would know what I had done, he might not talk to me. And they, right? But then they realize that Aaron HaKohen was totally love and devotion. And they said, yes, he'll talk to me, but I'm now prepared to rectify my downside. And such is the power of learning and devotion to Torah. Okay. 1 second.